on just one subject. That subject is illegal broadcasting. As well as the three well-known and legal local stations operating in London, there are a number of other people using transmitters illegally. Some of these are young kids who just fool about with electronics and transmitters in their bedrooms. But there are some stations which are broadcasting regularly, broadcasting professional-sounding programs, some of them on the air 24 hours a day, and all of this done illegally. But why are these stations doing it? And can they really change the law? Some of them say they want to change the law. Can they change the law by breaking it? And why aren't the authorities able to put these stations out of business? And do we really need more radio stations in London? Those are some of the questions we'll be asking on today's Sounds Good. So today, as I've said, the programme devoted entirely to the subject of land-based pirate radio here in London, those illegal stations which are operating in the capital. Now, we've been out to see some of these stations in operation. Our reporter for this was Radio London's own ex-pirate, Tony Blackburn. He went along with our producer, Tom Brown. Tom is with me now, just before we hear the report that Tony has done. Which stations did you visit, in fact?
We visited three stations altogether, Radio Jackie, Radio Sovereign and JFM Radio. Now, Jackie and Sovereign are southwest London and operate on medium wave, and JFM operate on, or they did at the time, operate on VHF.
What kind of operations are these? Are they operating fairly openly?
Yes, it's a debatable question, really. Radio Sovereign are very open in their operation. They actually advertise their address, where they actually broadcast from. They're very open indeed. Radio Jackie, on the other hand, are fairly quiet about their operation. Although they do lots of press and publicity, they've even got a Radio Jackie shop, this kind of thing. So, on the whole, it's fairly open.
Now, what are the studios and transmitting equipment like? What are the technical standards of the stations?
Difficult question, really, because Radio Sovereign, their studio's very good. They actually use a semi-professional broadcasting desk. The transmitter's like any other transmitter, lots of valves, coils everywhere. It gets them on the air. Technically, they're quite good. I was quite surprised, actually, by both stations, although I didn't see very much of the Radio Jackie operation, because, as I say, they were a bit protective.
Now, they, as I understand it, they sometimes use separate studios, don't they, from the actual transmitter site, so they have some kind of UHF link, do they, between studios and broadcast transmitter?
Yes, that's right. Radio Sovereign actually use an aerial in their back garden. Literally, it's strung between the roof of their house and the roof of the house behind it, so there's this great long aerial over the back. Radio Jackie, on the other hand, actually use a link. This means they can place the transmitter in the best position as they feel.
And all of this, of course, is absolutely illegal.
Oh, it's totally illegal, yeah. It's going against the Wireless Telegraphy Act, 1949.
Well, no doubt we'll be hearing more about that 1949 Wireless Telegraphy Act later on in the programme. Thank you, Tom. We're just about to hear, then, this full documentary report on the land-based pirates in London. But first of all, let me just mention that after we've heard this, we'll be speaking to the so-called programme controllers of Radios Jackie and Sovereign. They will be in the studio with us here. You'll be able to join us on the phone on 486 7744. But first, let's join Tony Blackburn down at one of the stations at Radio Sovereign, talking to Crispin St. John.
Crispin, thank you very much for agreeing to come on the programme. You're pretty obvious about where you broadcast from. I mean, when we turned up, there's an aerial, a massive red aerial, right up on top of the roof, and you're literally just round the corner from the police station. In fact, you overlook the police station.
Absolutely. Well, the whole operation has to be open and above board to make it credible, in our opinion.
What's the name of the road we're in, then?
Sherland Road in Twickenham.
The police know you're here?
Of course they do, yes.
Everybody knows you're here?
Yep. Absolutely open, you know, open fact.
Now, you are broadcasting, nevertheless, illegally, aren't you?
Technically, we are, I suppose. You know, there are a couple of points we could be pulled up on, but
What are those points?
Under the Wireless Telegraphy Act, for installation and or operation of equipment which is there without a licence.
Have you been raided here?
Raided is a very heavy term. We've had a couple of inspections by the Home Office of our equipment.
Yeah, so what happens when they come round?
We allow them in and let them do what they want to do, basically, which is to inspect the equipment, make notes on it and turned Love home.
Do you continue broadcasting when they're here?
We close down because they need to inspect it, you know, their way.
So, I mean, when they leave, what do they say? I mean, do they say that we're going to come back? Do they take the equipment away?
They certainly don't take the equipment away. They have no right whatsoever to do that. But we treat them as gentlemen, they treat us as gentlemen, and leave quite happily.
Billy Joel and Future Girls this hour from Radio Sovereign, 25 minutes away from 9 o'clock, and it's St. John in the morning.
On every record that is played, and it does say that no unauthorised performing of this record must be undertaken without permission. Now, you haven't got permission, and of course you are going against, and you're not paying performing rights, as all other legal stations are having to pay.
From the moment we began broadcasting, we were in touch with the different bodies like PRS, and we have made it very clear to them, we want to pay.
If you did have to pay full performing rights, how would you actually be able to cover the costs?
Well, if we take PRS, Performing Rights Society, they charge the independent commercial stations 4.5% of their net advertising receipts in their first year. We could easily do that.
How are you doing with advertising then?
We've been, in the last week, fully booked on quite a few days. That's 9 minutes, which is the most that the IBA allow their stations to run, so we stick to those same rules.
So although you are, in inverted commas, illegal, you are actually sticking to the IBA ruling then?
We follow the IBA rules on advertising and codes of practice. We follow the normal broadcast rules on news and current affairs, balance and so on.
Why is that?
Because we have to be a responsible outfit. I wouldn't be involved in a station that wasn't. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Now, you actually, Crispin, have, in fact, worked for the IBA, haven't you?
I worked in commercial local radio, I mean, down in Swansea and Newcastle and whatnot.
Yeah. Now, you are also at this station full-time, so presumably you are earning quite a bit of money from it. I mean, how does this compare with, say, the ILR pay?
Better money for me than I was earning in ILR. Probably putting in more hours, but it's well worth it at the end of the day. See, one of the points that was pointed out to us in the very beginning by the Home Office in different documents was the fact that small stations like this could not financially exist. That was one of many points that was put against this kind of radio. We have proven that financially we can exist and survive as long as we like.
Who put the money up for this station?
It was John Kenning. I had the idea. He said, OK, I'll put the money up. And away we went.
Who is John Kenning?
He's boss of the station now. I mean, he works full-time with the station, and John's been involved in the disco business, entertainments for a long time.
What would be the cost of putting a station like this together? In other words, getting the studio, the equipment, roughly?
Here, we, I think, spent about £30,000 because we took a lot of expert legal advice, which, we've kept under our hat on the whole thing.
And what are the running costs? Because you don't pay the disc jockeys, do you?
£5
expenses, I gather.
It does vary between disc jockeys, obviously, as to what programme they're doing and how many programmes they do during the week. It starts £5 and upwards sort of thing per programme. The running costs are well over £1,000 a week. I think we're talking about nearly £2,000 in all at the moment.
£2,000 a week. Now, what would that go on?
Staff, promotional expenditure, engineering. New music. We have to buy old records, which unfortunately don't cost 6 and 8 pence each anymore. Last week we spent £800 on new records. The week before that, £500, and so on. All mounts up. All the profits are put back into the station. I mean, there's no money that's...
Well, once you've taken out your own fee for that. When you said the staff there, I mean, how much staff do you have here? How many are involved in the station, full-time?
Full-time staff on admin, really, is about 6 people. That includes John Kenning, Julie, our secretary, head of sales, myself, our engineer, and so on. The disc jockey is obviously sort of regarded as freelance. There's 6 full-time on that category, and about another 6 that come in just to do odd weekend programs and so on.
With oldies, all your favorites.
Of course, if you were made legal, The news, it is a very expensive thing to actually operate, isn't it? I mean, news gathering is very expensive. How would you be able to do that?
From January the 1st, we're taking it from an agency which we're subscribing to, which would be one of the British agencies. I'm also trying to work out an arrangement with one of the US networks for American-based news.
Just as a matter of interest, why do you want to do it? Because for a lot of people will say, great, you know, what they're doing, it gives a lot of people in fun and entertainment. But why? Because at the end of the day, do you really believe that you are going to get a license to broadcast? Or don't you really care?
We do care. It would be very nice to have a bit of paper on the wall saying we're legit, 100%. But basically, we do need more radio in this country. It's quite ironic that on a Sunday night, we can turn the radio on and find very little to actually interest us. I mean, there just isn't the choice. We are giving one little bit of extra choice to people in this area. It really is as simple as that. The more stations, the more choice, the better, surely.
But why do you personally take it on yourself to do this? I mean, somebody having worked in the independent local radio system, and also on the pirate radio ship. I think you were out on Radio North Sea as well for a time.
North Sea.
Is it this piratical feel that you have?
It's perhaps pioneering, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we want to see change, and if there's an avenue to take which will mean radio will change as a result, then perhaps we're the sort of people that try to do it. There has to be a change. Somebody's got to be involved. And thankfully, we've got a nice crew here that help us along on that task.
How about the audience reaction? How do you gauge that? And how do you know how many people are actually listening to you?
Well, we're having a survey carried out within the next couple of weeks by one of the large companies. But as far as audience reaction goes, we have the phone, you know, rings pretty continuously. Mail is pretty good. I can show you, the public files on the mail, the kind of response there is from the audience. We actually get out and meet the audience as well. I mean, we walk along the streets and go do our shopping with them. You know, there is this sort of absolute communication. You know, the disc jockeys aren't stars sort of thing. They can actually go and mix. I mean, it's...
You don't do Radio Sovereign roadshows in the police station or anything like that? It's not quite as obvious as
they
that.
Haven't hired us yet. I mean, we'll probably do something at Christmas. But we do things like the Radio Sovereign night out we had last week, which is held over at Colnbrook, which was very successful.
Was that broadcast at all?
No, we didn't broadcast it for technical reasons, simple as that.
But like no the equipment? I mean, are you doing
that? No, we can get it, but I was a little bit afraid of the fact that we had... Colnbrook's the other side of Heathrow Airport, and I didn't want to see the station with a 0.1% of a chance causing any interference to Heathrow's operations. You know, it wouldn't be worth it. But... We did that. We've done riverboat trips with Johnny Savile and so on. But they're all held to help raise money for our children's fund, which we run, which is to buy a sunshine bus at the moment for a children's home in Richmond.
Is this done on purpose? In other words, the charitable side of some of the pirate land-based radio stations is pretty well advertised. Is this to prove a point?
It is. It's to show that people care and that small stations like this can get audience response. You know, that the listeners do care about what happens in those small little areas. It's all very well, you know, the bigger stations doing, I mean, like Capital does its Help a London Child and BBC Television does the thing and whatnot. We can do it in our own little way. You know, the neighbours can get together, as it were, with their radio station.
And finally, Crispin, how about the relationship with the other pirate radio stations, like Radio Jackie, JFM, Horizon Invicta, some of the others? I mean, do you all link up together? Is there a common code of conduct or not?
There isn't at the moment, because there's only really ourselves and Radio Jackie operating full-time to any degree. There is no official sort of liaison at the moment. Maybe there will be in the future. I just don't know at the moment, though.
Here's the latest weather alert from wonderful Radio Sovereign.
Expect a little drizzle in some places, but it'll be mainly dry and cloudy. Now, the outlook for tonight, mainly dry again, misty in outlying areas later on. The high today will be around about 10 degrees Celsius. The overnight low tonight, about 5 degrees. The time right now is, you've got it, bang on 9 o'clock. This is Radio Sovereign, broadcasting on 200 meters, 7 days a week. Radio Sovereign, Britain's first solid gold radio.
Crispy and St. John.
Crispin St. John, Programme Director of Radio Sovereign, talking about the running of the station. Well, every radio station obviously tries to place its transmitter in the optimum position, for example, on the top of a hill, or perhaps on a mast. But Sovereign doesn't have the luxury of choice. Their transmitter is very close to the studio.
If you can imagine, a very, very small little back garden. There aren't many plants here. They're not surviving very well. It's probably because of all the RF that's flying around the place. And there's a little shed at the bottom of the garden, which I'm going to wander into now, and hopefully I'll find the chief engineer, in fact, the only engineer here, Mike Barrington. Mike.
Hello, Tony.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Well, this is an amazing bag of tricks you've got here. I gather you've already blown one transmitter up.
Yes, we blew one sky high completely.
Yes.
Whole thing, total rise off.
But you've got this other very small little object going here. I mean, it really is remarkably small, isn't it?
Well, it's about 40 watts output, and it's covering a range of about 10 miles radius from the aerial.
And you built this yourself?
No, actually, we bought it off someone to get us started. We're now building our own, which produces 200 watts, and we have a, over in the corner, you'll probably see a 1,000-watt linear, which will give us a little bit more power in the future.
How much would this 40-watt transmitter cost?
No, I believe the sum was about 200 at the time. Mm. Now, it's been very reliable.
Now, you build the transmitters yourself as well, don't you?
That's right, yes.
I mean, how did you get involved in Radio Sovereign?
Years ago, I remember listening to the offshore stations, got very interested, heard a few things on land, and then later went out and joined Radio Carolina.
Is it really because you're an enthusiast, a radio enthusiast, or...?
I was a radio amateur at one time and got thoroughly bored with that and decided to go on something a little bit better.
Now, if it wasn't for you, obviously the station couldn't get on the air, so how many hours do you put in a day on a station like this?
Well, basically, I live here.
Oh.
So I get up in the morning and do a bit and mess around during the day and... At the moment, I'm playing records in the early hours of the morning over the weekend, so it's quite a hectic day.
Now, the range of this transmitter, you've just said, is 10 miles. When you get up on the full power, which what will that be?
Full power would be 200 watts to start with. Then we'll go on to the 1,000 watts during the evening to sort of clear the smog, as it were.
And what range will that give you?
Well, a basic range on a normal radio, say 20 miles, 20 to 30 miles on a standard portable radio. So most of West London... Central London, bits of North London.
Now, how do you boost the signal up? Because you've got various other ways of doing it here, haven't you?
Well, we've got a higher power transmitter, which is over in the corner there, and we can then drive the other unit, which you can see over here on the left.
You also use an Optimod, don't you?
Yes, it's a home-built thing. It's an Optimod that we borrowed and pulled the bits and bought a section of it and built the thing up ourselves.
And it's highly compressed, the signal?
It's very highly compressed, what we call C2F.
That sounds very technical
to
me.
Yeah, it is. It's a C2F unit. That's what we call it anyway.
How long does it take you to build a transmitter?
I've been messing about with this one for about 3 weeks now, and I have actually tested it, but got a few teething problems with it, and I've got to make sure it's up to Home Office specification before we dare put it on the air. Obviously.
What would happen if you didn't check that out properly?
Well, Home Office would be quite in their rights to come around and take the thing away, but they're not allowed to do that, so obviously we feel the thing's got to be up to some sort of standard, i.e. a BBC standard.
Oh, so you are working to our standards, then?
Oh, most certainly, yes.
What is going to be the cost of the transmitter, the 200-watt one that you're going to get on the air?
It's cost us... Most of the parts have been bought at reasonable prices, but I think, really, the messing around has cost us about £200.
Now, for the average listener, would he be able to detect a difference in a good quality of signal, the quality of signal that you put out here on Radio Sovereign, or that which comes out, say, from Capital Radio, LBC, or, for that matter, us?
I wouldn't have thought so. No difference at all, really. There is a slight difference. You spend a lot more money than what we have. But we're getting there. Basically, we've started from the top of the house and started working through, replacing all the equipment, and now we're down into the transmitter room, and we're starting in there.
Now, one or two ILR radio stations, they've gone on there, and it's cost them, say, £500,000. Those are some of the figures. Perhaps it might be a little bit less, it might be a little bit more. But certainly, that's a rough figure. If you were able to go legal, technically now, with the studio and perhaps the staffing and everything like that, how much do you think it would cost to get Radio Sovereign on the air, covering perhaps the same area that Capital Radio, LBC, Radio London covers? How much would it cost you?
Well, we know for a fact we can buy a transmitter from the States, a 50-kilowatt transmitter, and that would cost us something like about £22,000. And plus installation, we could be on the air, say, for £50,000 with a nice, strong signal.
So what you're saying, the legal stations that we have on the air now, it would probably cost you think, about £50,000, where it's cost them £500,000.
Well, yes, and we'd own our own transmitter. We wouldn't be renting it at some ridiculous price.
So why do you think it is so very, very expensive for the legal stations to get on the air?
Well, obviously, the IBA have to rent or buy sites and install equipment and pay people to maintain it, and it costs them a hell of a lot of money to do it. But if we have the transmitters on our own premises, we buy the premises, say, at an extra cost apart from what I've already quoted. You know, I'm paid to maintain studios and transmitters all in one. There's no messing around getting some guy to travel 20 or 30 miles to a transmitter every time it goes bang.
Now, how about the aerial? Because you've got this aerial on top of the house. I think it's rather an attractive-looking aerial, actually.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It is a very nice aerial. What do the neighbours think of this?
Well, they're surprised. They saw us making the thing up in the street, the long wire section, which is three wires sort of suspended from two masts, one on top of the buildings across over the back somewhere, and one on our own building. And they just said, was this a new aerial? And we said, well, yes. And they said, does that mean we're going to get a better signal? I mean, they live next door, but they seem to pick it up all over their radio. But, you know, what we've done, we had one complaint of interference very locally, and we bought the chap a brand new radio, and he's thrilled a bit, so he can listen to Radio London, which is sort of on a more or less adjacent channel now.
And finally, how about the Boris of Air? I gather he came round even.
Oh, he popped round and suggested that the mast was a little bit too high, so we asked him how high the mast should be, and he said, well, I don't know. So he went away, and we haven't heard any more about it.
He's quite happy about it.
He seems quite happy. He listens to the station all the time.
Only a matter of some 4 or 5 miles away is 24-hour-a-day, 7 days-a-week pop station Radio Jackie.
Weather for Sunday night, cloudy and dry, but rather misty. And Monday, cloudy, misty at first, but with bright intervals developing. Mostly dry, with possibly an isolated shower or two later. Winds, light or moderate and southeasterly. And the temperature, minimum, is 10 degrees centigrade and the maximum, 16 degrees centigrade.
Radio Jackie, 24 hours a day.
Radio Jackie, unlike Sovereign, is run by a committee and is a much more secretive and nervous operation. On arrival at the studios at Worcester Park, we were told that we couldn't actually go into the studio and that the interview would be carried out in their new production centre, which turned out to be a semi-detached house a mile away. There we met and were cross-examined by members of the committee, who seemed worried about our presence. We met programme controller Dave Stevens.
Dave, Radio Jackie was really the pioneer, wasn't it, of land-based commercial radio.
It started in 1969, in March.
But now you are on the air 24 hours a day and have been like that way for how long?
We started at Christmas at the end of last year, 1982.
The difference now in the operation that you have now, I think in the early days it was really done on a shoestring, wasn't it? And you used to go out on the fields and it wasn't done live, was it?
The programmes were taped in advance, often on the same day as they went out, but we weren't able to operate the programmes live.
Now, of course, you are on the air 24 hours a day live. You operate from a studio. But you do broadcast differently from Radio Sovereign, don't you? Because Radio Sovereign have a transmitter actually in the same building. They have the studio in the same building. And they've got an aerial right up on top of the roof. Now, you won't find that, and it's not quite so obvious at Radio Jackie. What is the difference?
Well, the reason why Radio Jackie has its transmitter sited elsewhere is because the ideal situation for the studio isn't the same as for the transmitter. The transmitter is more suitably sited for technical reasons. Elsewhere, and we link between the studio and the transmitter.
How do you do that?
With a radio link.
Also, I suppose it means that if, like all radio stations, you get raided, presumably just the transmitter goes, does it?
This is correct.
Like all land-based stations, you've been raided. What's happened to you? I mean, Radio Sovereign told us about the fact the Home Office came along, they had a look at the transmitter, said it looked very nice, and then left. And they also, I believe, said that they enjoyed the programmes.
I think they've said more or less the same to us.
So how many times have you been raided over the last 14 years?
Over the last 14 years, we've been visited on quite a few occasions. Since we've been operating this year, we've had two visits, which I'd regard mainly as station inspections to make sure that our equipment is functioning within the correct technical parameters.
How many staff do you have on Radio Jackie?
As presenters on the station, covering overnight, 7 days a week, we have 30 presenters. Radio Jackie is run by a committee of 9 people.
Are these people who get paid for doing this, or is it just for the love of it?
No one is paid at all to work for Radio Jackie. apart from expenses.
Therefore, why is anybody bothering to do it? Is it just trying to make a point?
We are trying to make a point. We're trying to change radio as it is in this country at the moment. We feel that in London, the one BBC local radio station and the one music ILR station are not adequate to cover a potential audience of probably 20 million.
If you were made totally legal then, what difference would you make to the output of your programmes that you put out now, which is basically music, you also do travel reports and various other things? What would you alter, if anything?
We would like to be able to involve the local community far more in the programmes which we do. Financially, this is a problem which we have at the moment, because obviously we have very low advertising rates at the moment. If we were a recognised radio station with a licence, we'd be able to charge more, not to such a point where we wouldn't be able to take in the local trade or the local businesses.
Do you operate within the IBA guidelines? In other words, 9 minutes advertising an hour, or doesn't that really bother you very much?
It does bother us. We don't concern ourselves with the IBA guidelines. We have our own guidelines. We would not take more than 9 minutes advertising per hour.
Why not?
Because we are there to provide a service for the community of South West London. We are very careful about our output.
Who actually guides everybody on air as to what they should say, what they shouldn't say, and what goes into the programmes?
That is my responsibility as programme controller, although the station is run by a committee of 9 people.
Radio Jackie, sound South West London. Radio Jackie, sound South West London.
This is Radio Jackie, broadcasting live 24 hours a day to Southwest London on 227 metres and 1323 kilohertz.
Radio Jackie News.
It's 12 midnight. This is Alan King. South Yorkshire
Police say both you and JFM do take illegally the IRN news at the top of the hour. Does that concern you at all, and why do you do that? IRN, I'll tell you right from the word go, we contacted IRN, and they don't seem to be too concerned about it. I mean, they realise that you're doing it, and they just say, well, there's nothing they can do about it anyway.
Yes, and obviously IRN realise that when we are licensed, we would be taking their national news, or would be interested in taking their national news, and in that event they would be paid.
They incidentally would, they did express the fact that they would quite like to be paid for it. So if you were considering actually getting in touch with them, they would actually quite like a fee for it. But they're not too bothered about it.
At this present moment in time, I don't think they would.
Now, one of the things that people will say against you, of course, and you probably know what I'm going to say now, is the performing rights. In other words, every record, it does actually say on it that it's not legal to broadcast it unless, of course, you've got the right to do it. You haven't got the right to do it. How would you go about it? I mean, have you actually gone about trying to become legal as far as that's concerned?
Well, of course, all the record companies right across the board are supplying us with records. They're very happy for us to play their records. Yeah. And all the artists concerned are very happy. We'd be very happy to pay performing rights if we weren't a voluntary radio station.
Let's get on to the cost. If you were given a permit now to broadcast, say, tomorrow, how much would it cost you? How much money would you need in the bank to actually start up your radio station?
Well, we have the initial equipment which is required for the studios. We already have a transmitter. We'd be looking for other premises. Really, we'd just be looking at the cost of the property.
But you need a better transmitter, presumably, wouldn't you? I'm talking about coming up to the technical standards, say, of the BBC and the IBA stations.
Yes. To replace equipment, to equip maybe 3 studios and a transmitter, we'll be looking at a sum of in the region of £50,000.
How much does it cost you to operate Radio Jackie now, on a weekly basis?
On a weekly basis, approximately £200 a week.
And of course you're not paying the disc jockeys anything, they're doing it for the love of it.
The disc jockeys are doing it for the love of it.
I don't think you'd find that would go on for much longer, of course, if you got a permit.
That's correct, so obviously then we'll be looking at salaries for the disc jockeys and for the limited number of engineering staff, but we wouldn't require the staffing of the BBC and ILR stations.
We'll come back to that in a moment, the staffing of that, but The £200 you just mentioned there, what does that go on?
This is covering expenses for rent for the premises, telephone bills, replacing equipment.
You just mentioned then the ILR stations and also the BBC. How do you think they have gone, or some of them have gone slightly wrong, finance-wise, then?
They're overstaffed, grossly overstaffed in some cases, are using premises far larger than are required to operate a radio station, and therefore it's not financially viable to operate a station.
Now, at the moment, Radio Sovereign is on 40 watts because they blew up one of their transmitters. What power are you on at the moment?
We broadcast with a power of 100 watts.
Now, why don't you broadcast with more power than that? Because you get bigger coverage, obviously.
Because our aim is to be a local radio station. We don't want national coverage. We don't want to cover all of London. Our aim is to cover southwest London and North Surrey.
Let's talk about now the charitable work that Radio Jackie does, because you do quite a lot for charity, don't you?
We do.
Tell us about some of the things you've been involved with.
Well, for St Hilaire Hospital, we raised £1,000 for a kidney machine there, £600 for video equipment for the Linden Lodge School for the Blind in Wimbledon, £3,000 for Queen Mary's Hospital in Carshalton, when they were raising money for minibuses. We were able to send a child suffering from muscular dystrophy to see Cape Canaveral.
You also, apart from all this, you also have your own shop now, I believe.
Yes.
Whereabouts is that?
It's situated at 5 Morden Court Parade in Morden.
Now, what do you sell there?
We sell T-shirts, sweatshirts, car stickers, and it's a shop which enables the public to come in and meet the people involved in presenting the radio station to them.
Finally, let me ask you one thing, Dave. All right, you're on the air now. You're trying to change the system in this country. What do you want to see, and what would you like to see happen from this moment on?
Well,
what is your aim, in other words?
Starting with London, we would like to see not one ILR station, but 4 stations operating to cover the London area satisfactorily. Not controlled by the IBA, but to be completely independent. Obviously, there would have to be strict guidelines laid down by the Home Office. But really, we'd like to see commercial radio, as it's operated in other parts of the world, for instance, America.
You say you don't want the IBA to run it. Why not?
The IBA, at the moment, control all of the ILR stations in this country. They own the transmitting equipment. There is no reason at all why this couldn't be controlled by the individual radio stations. It works perfectly happily in the States. It would cost a lot less money to run a station on that basis. And we would like to conduct our own surveys with the local community and find out what they want to listen to, rather than be told by a central body how to run the radio station.
So therefore you want to own your own transmitter and run the risks of collapsing if you can't make a go of it?
That's correct. Yeah. But we are quite confident that we would have no problems and that the business wouldn't have to go into liquidation.
Turn on to Radio Jackie. Radio Jackie.
Both Radio Jackie and Sovereign operate a service on medium wave, but with a completely different type of operation, JFM broadcasts jazz funk music on VHF. On the evening we visited JFM, the programmes were originating from a bedroom in the Crystal Palace area due to Home Office intervention the week previous. There I met Brian Anthony.
Brian, let me ask you what happens in a typical raid, because you're well practiced at this one now. What actually, who comes along and what happens to you?
Well, really, we don't, most of the time we don't know who comes along, because we can be happily doing our programmes and all of a sudden, it's off. But basically, the post office will track it, they'll go up there, they've got keys, all the post office have all the keys that are needed for the blocks to get in on the roof, the lot, disconnect all the equipment, smash the aerial up, take the transmitting gear away, and that's the last you see of it. Unlike medium wave, we can't claim the equipment back or say, look, you're not taking it, it belongs to us, because they'll just whiz us away as well.
But they eventually, if they track you down, they track the transmitter down. Now, the transmitter, we happen to know this evening, is 4 miles away from where we are now. Do they ever manage to find the studio?
I don't think really they're interested in looking for the studio. I mean, their main all they've really sent out to do is to actually get us off the air. And that's what they do. They do their job. I mean, I've got no extra grind with the post office. I mean, we're breaking the law. They're carrying out their duty, which is to get us off. I don't like it, but you can't have a go at the people for doing what they're paid to do.
But the expensive part of the operation really is the studio, isn't it? I would have thought if they'd managed to confiscate two or three studios, then you really have had it.
Well, you can look at it from another aspect as well. A lot of listeners you probably lose over the years because they get sick and tired of tuning in and it going off. And they'll tune to another station and then off that goes, and then they'll tune to the third one and then that's off and then that's it. They'll say, oh, well, moan, moan, moan. And they will never do anything about it. Well, that's not all of them, but the ones that will moan, they very rarely do anything about it. The ones that write in and appreciate the situation just wait until next week and they tune in again.
Right, in tune with JFM on 94 megahertz is Brian Anthony and my special guest today, and well pleased to have him along, Roy Ayres.
JFM 94 megahertz, FM stereo.
How about the advertising? How do you go about getting advertising? Because you can't exactly advertise your address, can you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, our address is 2 Mitcham Road. That's the mailing address. That we give out on air.
And they just know where you are now, do they?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not illegal to use a telephone number. It's not illegal to use a mailing address or anything like that. It basically, unlike the Marine Offences Act, we are just breaking the law using a transmitter. With the Marine Offences Act, it is illegal to supply money, food, goods of any sort. It is illegal to advertise. It is illegal, really, to have any correspondence with that illegal offshore radio station whatsoever. But we do not come under the Marine Offences Act. All it is for us is illegal to install, set up a transmitter, comes under Section 1 of the Wireless Telegraphy Act.
If somebody from the Home Office or the police or whoever came in here now and found you broadcasting, what would happen to you?
Well, we would be cautioned. We would be told we're going to be charged with Section 1 of the Wireless Telegraphy Act. They may even try and do us on two counts of broadcasting, one from here and one from the main site.
How about the DJs? Do they get paid working here?
No, they don't get paid. There's no money to pay them.
So it's all really enthusiasts, but is their main aim, is it just that they want to be on the air and enjoy themselves, or is there that major aim to alter the system that we have now?
I think I can say for every single one of the DJs on JFM, they are doing it specifically because they believe in the music, they believe that this country should have a music radio station of this sort, and, well, they are enthusiastic. But they're not doing it. I mean, I'm quite happy to say that I don't think there's anybody on this station that's on an ego trip.
JFM. You got the
look. If things don't go your way and you aren't able to become legal, what of the future? Are you prepared to do this for as long as you... Well, forever?
Well, obviously not forever, because techniques will obviously improve with us and will also improve where the authorities are concerned. And when those techniques are introduced, it could get to a point where it's absolutely impossible to broadcast. But I certainly have no intention of folding up JFM until such times that we've given it a good try to get legalised, or somebody manages to get legalised.
JFM, 94 megahertz, FM stereo.
The three stations that Tony Blackburn visited, Radio Sovereign, Radio Jackie and JFM. I think it might be time to remind you that you are in fact listening to BBC Radio London. This is Sounds Good, and we're talking about pirate radio in London. We've heard from three of the stations involved. We'd now like to hear from you. Do you think that these stations are worthwhile? Do you in fact listen to them? Do you think that London could do with a few more radio stations? Are you ever annoyed at interference by pirate broadcasters? Well, you can join us on 486-7744. With me in the studio now, two of the people you've already heard, Crispin St. John from Radio Sovereign and Dave Stevens from Radio Jackie. Well, we heard something in the tape there about your views on the regular stations in London. What do you think about Capital, LBC and Radio London? Do you think they don't do an adequate job? Crispin first.
They certainly do provide choice, but I don't think enough choice. I don't think it's a case of ever knocking what, say, BBC Radio London or the other two stations do. Just simply a matter that I think, as a listener as well as a broadcaster, there should be a little bit more choice, a good deal more choice.
Right, well, I totally agree with what Crispin was saying then. And in London, as I said on the interview, the BBC Radio London and RLR, Capital Radio, they're unable to cater for any one group of people living in London because they're broadcasting to a potential audience of 20 million.
So the basic argument there is that we need more radio stations in London. Well, if you've any comments on that, 486-7744. I see all the lines are going at the moment, but that's the number to ring, 486-7744. Now, we did try and get somebody from the Home Office and the Department of Trade to come on the programme today to explain the authorities' views on the situation. Unfortunately, they were unable to put up a spokesman to appear on the programme. So, about the legal situation, about why the pirate stations are not simply closed down by the police, we've been talking to Radio London's legal expert, Gary Jacobs.
The general situation is that enforcement of the legislation is by the minister responsible at this moment in time, the Department of Trade, the minister responsible for telecommunications, and it's delegated to post office engineers and experts who go out and use their tracking devices to find where the broadcasts are actually coming from. They then have the power to go to a magistrate and get a warrant and to search those premises and take away any apparatus that's being used.
But I think this might be where the problems come in, because if they get there, find there's an illegal transmission and they've then got to run off and get a warrant, the pirates have time to switch off.
Well, the answer is yes, but it doesn't alter the fact that the broadcast was made. They don't have to be broadcasting at the time that the warrant is sought or at the time that the warrant is actually carried into effect. As long as they were illegally broadcasting, a warrant can be obtained.
Now, to get a successful prosecution, would the post office men who come round have to find the actual transmitter, or would...
What they have to do is prosecute the people. The need to find the transmitter is a matter of evidence. It's a matter for the prosecution how they actually seek to prove that a particular person has committed an offence. The availability of the apparatus itself, or the fact that the person was actually sitting by the apparatus, may well be sufficient for a court. It's a matter of evidence in each case.
Why is it that these people are able to operate so openly? For instance, one of the stations does discos, yes. And they advertise them by the name of the radio station, and they say that the person doing the disco is one of their broadcasters. Would it be possible for the police or anybody to go down there and nab them?
Well, not normally, no, not without a warrant, and a warrant would only normally be applied for by the relevant minister through his... the people that he delegates it to. There's no offence for a government department not to actually carry out his obligations. You can't say that the post office must be prosecuted for failing to administer the law. And there's no offence involved if I listen to such a programme and don't report it. I don't become a criminal by happening to have tuned in to that particular broadcast. It's not one of the restricted broadcasts such as police and the like, which one mustn't listen into. If the public aren't going to report it and aren't bothered, and if the post office aren't bothered, obviously these people will continue indefinitely.
What are the levels of fines for illegal broadcasters?
Well, in the case of the land-based, they vary depending upon one's involvement, whether one is supplying the apparatus or using the apparatus or just generally committing crimes under that act, operating without a licence. They vary from £200, £400, and in fact, for some offences, it does carry a period of 3 months' imprisonment.
Gary Jacobs, who's Radio London's legal expert. The threat there, then, of 3 months' imprisonment or fairly hefty fines. Dave Stevens, Radio Jackie, does that kind of thing frighten you?
It doesn't, well, obviously it frightens us. We'd far rather have a license and be allowed to broadcast without the threat of that fine or prison sentence being there. And like with so many other things, to prove a point, we're doing it in the only way possible.
Crispin, perhaps 3 months in prison for you for doing these illegal things.
Perhaps, but over British history, throughout British history, there's been many times where people have had to go outside the law to prove a point, as Dave has just said. It's just a pity that we are, at the moment, in a very backward state. In the
television channels in the country, there are quite a lot more than that, radio stations.
There are.
Legal ones.
Oh, yes, there are, but for some reason at the moment, you know, cable is developing fast. The next couple of days we expect to hear the first 12 areas that get cable franchises. Satellite broadcasting is well underway, you know, plans for that. But radio, again, I mean, we are at a situation now, the same situation almost we were in, say, 1964, before the offshore stations first appeared, where things have just got so far behind, it took somebody to come along and kick them up the backside, as it were.
Crispin St. John from Radio Sovereign and Dave Stevens from Radio Jackie with us in the studio. You on the phones on 486-7744. Grant Pearson on line one. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Can I begin by correcting one point of fact you mentioned earlier? Although we're at Radio Thamesmead not such big fishes as Capital or London or LBC, we are nonetheless, it isn't just three other stations which are legal.
Sorry, you are from Radio Thamesmead.
Yes.
Perhaps you can then explain what Radio Thamesmead is for those who don't know.
Yes, Radio Thamesmead is a legal community radio station which goes down a cable. And we've been doing this for 6 years under an experimental license given to us by the Home Office. But we are only allowed to go down a cable to the Thamesmead area, which is a sort of new town area in southeast London on the border of Kent. It's a very inferior means of reaching our listeners in terms of if you compare it to using a transmitter. But nonetheless, I suppose your guest with you wouldn't mind if I actually said that we're the good boys. We're doing it properly in the sense, well, not properly, but we're not breaking any laws. But the fact is that we are not able to do our job very effectively because we are obeying the rules. And privately, I think that a lot of people in radio, particularly Third Force Radio, actually applaud the courage and the work that the pirates are doing. Publicly speaking, we are supported by local boroughs, and we wish to do things the right way. But let me put forward a dilemma we're faced with for your guests to comment. We're run on cable at the moment, as one of your guests just said. Radio is taking the back seat to cable and other things. We're in danger of losing our cable because the operators can put television down it, and they won't give us specific assurances that we can keep our channel. So we asked the council involved, and they too said, well, no, they were very pleasant about it, but they're not able to give us specific assurances. So unless we do something naughty, and I don't think we will, like broadcasting without a license, we are faced with extinction. My question to your guest is, apart from comments to that, is that Third Force Radio has suffered a lot because there are lots of different people wanting to do different things. That's quite right, because that's what we want on radio, much more variety. But the fact is, this has caused problems in terms of presenting a unified front to the Home Office and to politicians. And I'd like to know their comments as to whether they feel that we ought to be making more efforts to presenting a more unified front.
Well, if I can just sum up that, I think the point you're making is, should the pirates get together then with these legitimate concerns, such as Radio Thamesmead, a cable operator?
Not exactly that, because the problem there, you see, is that the moment the so-called legitimate people join forces, then it entitles their protagonist to say, oh, well, there you are, you're just as bad as the rest of them.
Dave Stevens, sorry to interrupt, can I just ask you, Dave, do you feel any affinity with outfits such as Radio Thamesmead?
Not really. Radio Thamesmead was set up as an experimental cable system, and it would not really be viable in other parts of London. It's viable in the case of Thamesmead because it's a very densely populated area. And of course, the listeners to Thamesmead are unable to listen to travel reports on their way to work, for instance, when they're driving along.
Because they can't obviously hear it in a car.
That's right. So local radio in that sense doesn't really seem to work.
not for the points that I've made.
Grant, can I ask you, is your actual intention to get a license to transmit as normal stations do?
Of course it is, and the reason we can't do the things that has just been described is because we're currently down a cable. Now, you see, the comment that's just been made implies that the gentleman who's just spoken doesn't think that we really, how shall I say, should be counted in the same legitimate demand for what he wants to do. And the answer is, well, of course we should. We want our own neighbourhood just the same as he wants his own slice of London. And we both need the same thing to do it, i.e. a transmitter.
Grant, it's Crispian here. Look, you have as much right to be on the air as probably anybody on this earth, and I must actually disagree with Dave there. Anybody that turns around in this country and says you can't broadcast to 10,000 people or 20,000 people, they are totally missing the point. For many, many years in this country, we've been told that you must have this magic figure of, say, 250,000 people or more to make a radio station successful. That is absolute rubbish. I could come and run your radio station tomorrow, put you in a nice profitable position, get you, you know, nice ratings and so on, and I'm sure there's a lot of other people in the radio industry could do the same. So no one should ever talk about the minimum number of people. Radio Sovereign, off the record, has had a number of meetings with people from the radio industry, and I'm going to people right at the top. We've had meetings, we've had discussions. We've never yet had any problems in arranging these meetings and talking about the future. I think in every case so far, I can't obviously name names, so I don't have the people's authority to do so, but in every case, they've been wholly supportive of what we are doing, and they see it as the move towards tomorrow. So your next move should be to apply to the Department of Trade to broadcast normally. I also want to hear from you tomorrow morning, if you phone me at our office number, and I want to have a meeting with you, whether you think it's good or bad or whatever, because the more stations that do get together of all kinds, the better.
We must move on, take a couple more calls. I'll pick you up later on, though, about the finances of stations. We're going to that in just a minute. But Mark from Peckham, good afternoon. Hello, Mark. No Mark from Peckham. Let's move on to another one. Maybe it will be Peter from Guildford.
That's right. Hello there.
Hello.
How do you do? I take my hat off to Dave and Crispian. I listen to their stations as much as I can do, and Radio Caroline as well. And I think the fault in this country is the ILR stations sound all the same. They might as well make it one national station. And that's why I don't like independent local radio.
Do you not think that perhaps Radio Jackie sounds like an ILR station?
No, I don't think so at all, because, you see, the ILR stations just play music from, say, the top 50. Jackie, I've found it in the past, to play records that haven't quite made it, or never did make it, you know? And it makes a bit of a change.
Dave Stevens, do you think your programming format is markedly different from a legal commercial radio station?
Well, yes, indeed, because we are in a position to play music from local bands from our area. And we know the figures from local record shops of what records are selling in our area differently to the national chart, and we're able to cater.
How, in other ways, apart from playing bands that might be local, how do you actually serve the local community? What local input or what local output is there on your station?
Well, we have a shop in Morden, Surrey, in London Road, Morden, and anyone can come into that shop with any information which they'd like us to put out. For instance, maybe their car's been stolen. The Morden Animal Sanctuary put out an appeal for us to homes for animals.
So
they were cleared out of animals within a few days.
But it's stolen cars and lost cats. Is that really
there's
a local
lot more,
service?
No, there's a lot more. And we've raised money for charities, but we've heard that already in the interview. The Royal Marsden Hospital, we raised £2,500 for them during the last few months.
Well, I'm thinking more in terms of what actually goes out on the air. I mean, is there any local news?
Oh, yes. I mean, we are continually brought on any local stories. We're always covering them.
Crispin, what about Radio Sovereign?
Because we have the agency service for our news now.
Which agency is that?
I don't want to name it on the air at the moment because we don't start the service officially till January the 1st. But we have news, always a local story. If it's worthwhile, we'll go to the top. Yes, we do all the cliche things like what's on and so on. I mean, every radio station does that. we do take a, perhaps a little bit more personal interest in what's going on there on those sort of lines.
But I wonder, when you're running a station on the kind of budget that you've been talking about, £2,000 a week for Radio Sovereign and £200 a week, are those figures right for Radio Jackie?
Yes, that's correct.
Whether you can really run any kind of journalistic setup on that kind of finance?
We don't do any specialist programs whatsoever on Sovereign. The policy is totally solid gold oldies. One new record an hour.
But if you were to employ one journalist, and if you were to pay NUJ rates, you'd have to spend about half of your budget on him, wouldn't you? Or her?
Well, no, we can do it. We can do it. And our plan is in the new year to have a separate news operation which can concentrate more and more on the news output. That doesn't mean our news output will increase in its minutiage, but it will be better. We will have somebody there to go and cover all the local things that are necessary. So, you know, I don't think there's a problem there.
But do you agree that at the moment it is mainly pop records?
Well, our brief is to be an entertainment station. It's a music radio station. So I'm not ashamed to say that, right.
David from Haywards Heath.
Oh, hello. My point is there's not enough airplay for certain types of music, mainly reggae and disco. Particularly reggae, there's only two programmes on the weekend, and they go out quite late at night. And if you don't get no airplay, you're not going to get any chart placing.
So are you saying that the pirate stations are a good idea?
Yeah, very good idea.
But do even your stations cater for that musical requirement?
Well, in the case of Radio Jackie, we broadcast 2 hours of boogie music every evening between 8 and 10 o'clock.
Crispin?
We, as I said just now, we are totally oldies, and it's mainly from the 60s, 1960s and 50s that we concentrate. My answer to Dave is quite simply this. If he thinks there's a demand there, then there should be a disco station on the air in London, a jazz station, a local classical music station, another all-news radio station, as opposed to a half-hearted attempt, and so on and so on. There isn't room in London, if we're talking about London and the South East, for over 100 stations. Absolutely no reason why there can't be the number of stations, and they can all specialise. So, I mean, that really is the answer. Otherwise, if, I mean, Radio Sovereign started doing specialist music programmes, we would end up in the same position as nearly every other radio station in this country, where they have to be jack-of-all-trades. And that's when it gets rather dangerous, I think.
Crispin, 100 stations in London. Dave, do you agree with that? Do you think London can support 100 radio stations?
There are no technical reasons at all why London couldn't support 100 radio stations. One of the main problems I see at the moment is that, I mean, in the case of this station, BBC Radio London, you're operating with a power of 50,000 watts. You're not just covering the London area. For example, my parents, who live down in Eastbourne, they're probably picking up this programme now. And on the east coast of the country, again, you can hear BBC Radio London with a perfect signal. Now, if everyone were to operate lower power transmitters, there is no reason at all, as Crispin said, why there couldn't be 100 radio stations. That's from the technical point of view.
But what about from the financial point of view? I'm thinking in particular of Radio London doesn't have to justify itself by advertising receipts, but LBC unfortunately does, and it does sometimes have some trouble in making a profit.
There are
it only makes a very slender profit.
Yeah, there are about 90-odd radio stations in New York City in that area. I'd imagine the same as the rest of the states, around 20% are non-profit, non-commercial stations. So, in other words, there are, say, about 70 stations in New York which are commercial. They either are successful or not. Their choice at the end of the day is, if they're not successful with the format they have, they can either change format or sell out.
Why is LBC having trouble then, when it's got when it's on one of only three stations in London?
Do you really want me to be honest? I think really, I mean, it's set down to very, very bad programming. I mean, I think over the years they've altered this, that, and the other. At the moment, they're talking about introducing 15 minutes of music into each hour. Now, if I know people like myself, I mean, I'm an avid Radio 4 listener. I hate, sounds daft, but I hate listening to pop music. I'll program it, I'll present it, I'll listen to it, you know, when it involves work and so on, but I'm an avid speech radio listener. If music comes on to, say, BBC Radio London, on a program I'm listening to, on the World Service or Radio 4, I will turn off. So I mean, LBC always is going in the wrong direction. If they were to be successful with All News, they would be All News and not wishy-washy.
So you think that there is room for All News stations and All Speech stations as well as music programming?
My God, yes, absolutely.
Seth from Farnham. Hello, Seth. Seth seemingly isn't there. Let's try the next one, which is Trevor. Trevor from Hackney. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I listen to JFM. Also, I listen to Horizon and Invicta radio, pirate disco radio station. And I think it's a good idea that you should have pirate stations, but they're spread all about the FM band. And if they could get all together and make one program, I think they'll get quickly legalized.
You've got a very bad line, Trevor. I think what you're saying, though, is it would be a good idea if the pirates were to pool their resources. Well, what do the two pirates here think? Would you like to team together?
Well, on a lot of matters, I know Radio Sovereign and Radio Jackie would be quite happy to do that. I think Crispin is correct.
That's right, yes. But I don't think... See, again, Seth is sort of suggesting that we all channel together and provide one programme, and that's getting away from the choice.
Defeating
thing.
The whole object of why we're there.
Yeah. Plus, Seth, I totally disagree with you on the fact that you say you like the pirate stations and you think there should be more pirate stations. I think there should be no pirate stations at all in this country. Anybody who breaks the law is in a dangerous situation. We don't like being pirates, and that we hate the name. It's the first time I think we've mentioned it since May. But no pirates. We should all have a license.
I wonder when the demands for more radio stations will stop. During the 1960s, there were demands for local radio. We now have that. Now operators like you are still insisting that they want more. If we had 100 stations, maybe there would be still pirates like you. When would it be possible to draw the line and say we have enough?
Well, in those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer of 1967, we really did believe that if a change did come about, there would be a good deal of choice, that wouldn't just be one radio station in each city scattered around the country. At the moment, we still have, excepting London, most areas have one commercial radio station, one public station, one BBC radio station, and that is your lot, matey. I don't know, how can you say, well, there should be X number of stations, that's the ceiling. I think it's just down to a technical...
So even if you decision. Did get a licence, there might well be a couple of other pirates springing up to compete against you. Let's
well,
turn
that,
to...
Well, really, that necessity shouldn't arise. I mean, from my point of view, the fact that Radio Jackie does have a very large audience is proof that the services being provided already aren't sufficient. Obviously, there's going to be a saturation point when it wouldn't be financially viable for yet another radio station to come on.
Tim from Sawbridgeworth. Can you hear us?
Good afternoon.
Hello.
I'm just bringing in a slightly different point from my experience. I lived in America for a couple of years, and there I worked on a legal local station which played classical music. This was entirely run by volunteers and funded by voluntary contributions. There was no advertising. Our operating costs were actually about £20,000 a year, and we had a listenership of about 10,000 to 20,000. I think this sort of demonstrates the point that small stations are quite viable, and that they do, if done and used intelligently, give greater variety of programming.
Sorry, could you just repeat those figures for the operating costs?
Okay, the operating costs, my figures may be a bit out of date. They were between £10,000 and £20,000 a year. Our transmitter actually was a 15 kilowatt transmitter, and we covered about a 30 mile radius. Our listener figures were estimated between 5,000 and 10,000.
Gosh, that's very low, isn't it, in our terms here?
Yes, I mean it is very low. And of course, you know, I mean.
And that was commercially viable. It was a commercial station, was it?
It was funded by listener contributions, non-commercial, run by volunteers. And all the costs were in the actual cost of electricity and equipment.
So people must have been paying a subscription of about £2 a year for that classical music service?
Yes, we had fundraising drives twice a year to raise the funds, and local business contributed as well.
There are many, many examples like that right across the states. As I said earlier on, there's around 20% of the licensed radio stations in the USA, of which there are 8,500 stations altogether, 20% are non-commercial. Many are owned by universities or non-profit-making organizations, so a commercial never gets broadcast. On the commercial success of some commercial stations, I can't quote the station or not know where it is, but the other day I was reading of a station that broadcast to a town of 13,000 people. 13,000 people. And it's making $300,000 a year profit. So I think a few lessons like that could be told. You know, Tim's brought up a very good point there, I think.
I think if the Department of Trade and the Home Office were able to be here, unfortunately they found that they're not, if they were here, they would say that illegal operations cause no end of interference, that they interfere with proper broadcast stations and that spurious emissions from your transmitters interfere with communications to aircraft and that kind of thing. Are you, in fact, even endangering life, perhaps, by your activities?
Not at all, because the engineers that are employed by Radio Sovereign and Radio Jackie are both fully qualified in the subject which they have to deal with, and we've carefully chosen channels so that we are not going to cause interference with any other broadcast station or with shipping or aircraft.
What protection have we, though? How do we know? Because any other transmitter is run either by the BBC or the IBA, and those are regularly inspected and they have...
Well, that's not quite true, because, of course, there are amateur radio stations in the country where you just have two people talking to each other. They're given a licence to build their own equipment, having passed a very simple examination. There are many thousands of these around the country. You could use exactly the same argument there. They could be causing interference. There is a strict licence there, which licensed radiometer has to abide by. And there's no reason why there shouldn't be a similar type of license for broadcast stations.
The argument about interference was brought up in the 1960s by the administration then to get rid of the offshore stations, so the Marine Offences Bill could be introduced. There's a whole series of arguments which were brought up, which to the layman would have thought, yes, well, they must be right, because it's being said by an official person. But there were never, or maybe one or two occasions where interference was caused. In each case, those offshore stations would have closed down, solved the problem. And I can assure you that as far as Radio Sovereign goes, if we had notification of interference being caused, our transmitter would go off within 5 seconds and we wouldn't come back until that problem had been solved. So far we have not caused, despite an allegation, have not caused interference to other radio service, especially not emergency services.
If we're going to go back to the 1960s and the pirates which were operating in the North Sea and in the Thames estuary, I think also there was a certain amount of suspicion of the underworld being involved in pirate operations, and that different pirate operators would be involved in trying to sabotage each other. Now, isn't there a great danger if there is a situation where anybody can operate a transmitter, that there's going to be some people making a lot of money, and great dangers of this kind of gangland involvement?
No, I don't think at all, really. I mean, in Ireland, there's about 70 private radio stations operating besides RTE, which is the official public broadcasting system. You don't get such problems there, and it's much more competitive situation there than it is here in Britain at the moment. The population of Ireland is about a quarter of what London's population is, so I don't think we'll ever come to that sort of situation. People always like to imagine things like that. I worked on the offshore stations way back, and some people turn around to me and say, oh, we remember when your radio station was bombed and all this sort of thing. Unfortunately, I remember just sort of silly little situations like that. Were very minor.
A minor bombing of a ship at sea. Anyway, let's move to Nigel from Wood Green. Nigel from Wood Green. Nigel from Wood Green doesn't seem to be able to hear us. He's on line three. That is line three. Hello, Nigel.
Hello.
Are you there?
Yes, good afternoon.
Hello, what's your question?
Well, I work for a North London radio station, Radio Amanda. Sort of part-time engineer and DJ, and the thing concerns me is the lack of specialist music radio in this country. For instance, the lack of rock music which we play, which is the reason we do it. No, hardly any soul, jazz, and you name it, there's hardly any of it. It's basically just pop music. Apart from Radio 3, which caters for classical music,
and there's so many stations. Why can't they cater for all these other types of music, as I've just mentioned, rock, soul, etc.?
So you'd like to see a lot more stations offering different choices of music?
Yes, exactly, as they've got in the States. It seems crazy, in the States they've got apparently a very good radio system, from what I've heard of it. But a lousy television system.
Oh, come on, Nigel. We really covered those points, I think, earlier on, Nigel, about, you know, that's the choice thing. We have to convince people now in this country, those people who make decisions, that this is all possible. But don't criticise the state's television system. Everybody does that. It's one of the old cliché arguments. People over in the States have a choice, and when I've got 27 channels to choose from on my box, I'm going to find something of interest, I'm sure. It's a lot more than four stations. But you've really got to try and convince those people who make decisions that a change is needed. It doesn't actually need a change in the law, by the way. The existing stations and any others can operate quite happily under the Broadcasting Act by being governed by the IBA. Certainly Radio Sovereign would come well into form as far as the requirements go for a local radio service.
David from Surbiton.
Hello, yeah, I'd just like to say that I'm starting a radio station up, and I've been working on it for about 2 years now, and it is coming on the air in December.
That sounds very nice.
So we're breaking the law, David. You know it's illegal.
Yeah, I have been working on it for quite some time. I know I'm younger than most people, but it's one of these smaller stations.
Yeah, how old are you?
15.
Hmm. So you've been working on this since you were 13?
Yeah, well, I mean, it started out as a pretty stupid idea, but now it's...
turned into a sensible one.
Turned more sensible. I've actually got an engineer who's working with me, who's building my transmitter for me.
That's a good start.
He was actually offered a job on Radio Caroline back in, I think it was 1968.
Well, that's when they closed down, of course, yes.
When they were just about to come back on, as the laws changed.
Yeah, it's a very interesting case history, but what was it you were wanting to say about your outfit?
I just wanted to say the idea of the station is to campaign against the IBA network, because I think it's totally wrong that they should have this system in this country whereby people have to pay in their money and lease the airwaves. It's just wrong, you know.
This was a point that came up during the interviews earlier on, that the situation with commercial stations is that they have to hire a transmitter from the IBA. Now, obviously, two guests here, they don't hire their transmitters from the IBA. Do you think that there is any good reason why, Dave Stevens, why the IBA insist on leasing out transmitters rather than letting the station's capital, for instance, have their own on top of Euston Tower or something?
Well, of course, the IBA's argument is that they would like to have complete control over those transmitters to make sure that there is no interference caused. But in the States, where every radio station own their own transmitter, there are none of these problems, so I can't see why the same shouldn't apply here.
Ireland, too, of course, is introducing commercial radio next year, and there the stations will own and operate their own transmitters, and then the overseeing authority will simply have to send engineers around on just routine maintenance trips, which is exactly as it could be over here. And I think there are a lot of people in independent local radio or management, I know this for a fact, that would prefer that to be the situation here too. So I think maybe the IBA will have to change its opinion on that over the coming years.
Now, when earlier on the tape we had, you were comparing the amount of money that it costs to set up your stations and the amount of money that proper legitimate commercial operators, and indeed the BBC with their local stations, with the amount of money they spend, it did seem quite amazing that you could get by with so little. Now, can we get down to how this is? Is it not that you, in fact, are stealing a lot of your programme output? You steal the news from IRN, you steal the records, you don't pay PRS, and therefore you don't have to pay as much for putting programmes out. Every time we play a record here, we have to pay quite a lot of money to do so, but you do so freely.
Well, we'd be more than happy to pay the PRS and MCPS. We have been in touch with both those organisations, and they've refused to take money from us. We'd be more than happy, though, to make those payments.
But you'd be paying quite a lot, wouldn't you? Do you really? I mean, it would bump up your £200 a week program requirement.
Well, obviously, the rates would have to be negotiated, and with a potential audience of a station covering all of London, that cost is going to be a lot more. As we are only catering for a small section of London, hopefully our payments will be considerably less.
What about your news output? Would you, if you were legitimate, would you employ your own journalists?
We'd employ our own journalists.
How many would you employ?
Well, that'd be difficult to put a figure on.
Two, three?
We'd presumably need three or four journalists
three
working full time for us.
So that would cost quite a bit, wouldn't it,
yes,
each week? A lot more than £200.
Yes, but at the moment, in advertising, we are taking considerably over £200 a week. We'd like to be paying IRN some of that money, if they take the money. We'd like to be paying PRS and the MCPS as well. However, the difference in the money which we're taking in advertising and our running costs is being donated to charity.
Crispin, what do you think? What I'm getting at is, if you were legitimate, you'd have a lot more costs to bear. It might be quite easy to run a station when you are illegal, but as soon as you are legitimate, you'll have all these costs to pay, and it might be a much more different situation. This might well be why legitimate radio costs so much more.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I understand exactly what you're saying. Before we ever went on the air, we looked into this. Radio Sovereign is actually negotiating at the moment with PRS, PPL, MCPS on
these
payments.
These are the copyright organisations.
Right. We would simply ask for an agreement very similar to the independent stations, where it wouldn't actually be an extra budget. It would be a part of the money coming in, and as far as to each, we'd pay a percentage of our net advertising receipts each quarter. So it would, you know, come out of that fund. I must again add here, if I can just mention, we do not relay IRN on Radio Sovereign, and we have budgeted for a newsroom from the new year of about four people, with obviously local stringers and so on, as we have at the moment in a certain capacity. So, I mean, yes, all these costs are taken into consideration, otherwise our argument would not be valid whatsoever. We've actually recently, in October, put another application into the Department of Trade, sent copies to members of the Commons and Lords and many other bodies and people, saying when we were licensed we'd carry on exactly as we are at the moment. But we do take all those considerations, those points into consideration.
The other thing is that people might not want to work voluntarily for you once you are a going concern.
Well, they don't work for us voluntarily anyway. We don't have anybody that works for Radio Sovereign that does not get paid.
Dave, Radio Jackie does.
Yes, but we don't have anyone at the moment who is paid. Obviously, we would be paying presenters if once we had the licence.
Now, we just heard then from a 15-year-old been planning his own radio station since he was 13. Does that kind of thing to you seem responsible?
It's very worrying, actually, that people suddenly think they can do it. I've been in broadcasting myself for about over a decade, let's say, and I don't know all there is to know. And I think if I thought back to when I was 15, if I wanted to start a radio station, I think it'd be a very irresponsible move. My advice to, I think, David, wasn't it, from Surbiton, is don't do it. You know, get to know a little bit more about life before you try and talk to other people about life, because communicating is a very, very difficult and complex business. I'd say David, his best bet is to put up with what you have to listen to at the moment, read about it, and just study. I mean, get out of the country and go abroad and find out about radio.
Some people might think that Radio Jackie, Radio Sovereign, that the other stations are run by 13-year-olds or 15-year-olds who haven't yet grown up.
Ooh. Sovereigns, I hate to think what our median age of our staff is, but we're a bunch of old men, really.
They might be old men, but they're still 13-year-olds at heart.
Not at heart, really, no. I mean, I've worked on all kinds of radio, and I wouldn't have done this unless I'd known at the time that it would work. We are very responsible. Everything is above board. I don't think anything we do is irresponsible.
The main concern for you at the moment must be the Wireless Telegraphy Act, which dates back to 1949, but as I understand it, the law is about to be changed with the new Telecoms Act, which incidentally also brings in a few more regulations about illegal broadcasting. Now, perhaps you can explain what the proposals are.
From what I understand, the bill is to help privatise British Telecom, but also there'll be some clauses in it to strengthen the Wireless Telegraphy Act, such as allowing entry and seizure of equipment without any court case. That I find, if we had a written constitution in this country, it would not go through Parliament. I only hope that
the members of Parliament that study this bill realise those points, because it could actually lead on to the similar sort of introduction of that, similar things being introduced to other laws, other bills.
They would be able to seize your equipment before you were proven guilty.
Exactly. We've always been brought up in this country to believe we're innocent until proven guilty. But that really isn't the argument. The argument
is... To have a radio transmitter, that there's no way you can legally have one, is there?
Well, there is at the moment. There is at the moment, but they're trying to make it an offence to actually possess one.
Actually, speaking of the new law, I see Nick from Richmond is wanting to say something on this. Nick?
Yes, good afternoon to you. I was just thinking that next year there is a new bill being put through, and I wondered if this would make possible pirate stations or local community radio stations more difficult to set up. And the reason for setting up a community station in the beginning anyway would probably be to follow the form, as they call it in the United States, of narrowcasting. I have been very specialist in radio, and devoting one station of time to simply in depth on a particular type of music or news.
We can hardly hear what you're saying, Nick, but you're talking about illegal stations, are you here?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so I think, Crispin, you've just been saying it's going to be more difficult, in fact. Dave Stevens, are you worried about this new act?
Well, hopefully we'll be given a licence by then because of the amount of support which we have locally. I'd like to see, before this bill is made law, I would like to see the government license stations such as Radio Jackie and Radio Sovereign so that we wouldn't have to break the law. I'll also have to point out that this law hasn't even been passed in Parliament yet, so changes to it could still be made. So we don't really know what the legal position is going to be next year.
Yeah, I don't think it's right to just suddenly say, right, outlaw it all and not replace it. I think there has to be a new system. I know certainly a lot of people in broadcasting at the moment feel the same way. It would be very wrong. I mean, what are we here in this country doing? We're saying, look, you're having fun, we'll make it illegal. I don't think that's really the way to do it.
Let's quickly take a call from Richard, who is calling from Suffolk, are you? Richard, are you calling from Suffolk?
Calling from Sudbury, which is about 15 miles northwest of Colchester.
Must be a typing error here. What do you want to say?
Yes, I'd like to comment on the programme variety of ILR, really, in relation to these other stations. I live in a rural area, and we have no local station up here, and I do feel that perhaps a station like this could well provide something that's missing up here. We have the four national radio networks, no BBC local station, no ILR, and I do feel that ILR generally, because of having to be viable in the way that it's viable financially over a urban area, is not viable over a rural area, and that's why they cannot provide local radio for such an area as the one in which I live. And I therefore feel that a station like, not perhaps Jackie, you know, any of those, but a more localist, specialised radio station with more local material would be useful up here.
Sorry, I've just lost the name of that caller.
It
but
was Richard.
Richard, well done. Someone is paying attention. You presumably would wholeheartedly support that, the two of you.
Yes, well, there's many areas in exactly the same position as where Richard lives. Richard, you've got a choice at the moment, a one choice of writing to the Home Office Local Radio Working Party, and you write to them at the Queen Anne's Gate, I think it is, Southwest 1, and say, your area hasn't got local radio, you suggested, and if there's enough local support, in a couple of years' time, you might find your areas on the list for contenders for an ILR franchise. Or you can join in with people like us and hope that the regulations are changed so a small business in your area could set up a local radio service or two and, provide... fill in that gap that's there at the moment.
Finally, can I ask both of you, when realistically, or if, you think the regulations are going to be changed, when do you hope that you will be made legal?
Well, hopefully before the new law is changed.
Sometime next year?
Those are the dates being quoted at the moment, but it's very difficult to talk about something which hasn't even gone through Parliament yet. But I think the one thing that could help stations like Jackie and Sovereign are people who like the services that we're providing. If they write to their MPs and also to the Home Office and the Department of Trade, and make them aware of the fact, much more aware of the fact than they are at the moment, that they're not happy with the just the BBC and the IBA stations.
That's right. At the end of the day, it's simply down to the listeners, and the listeners should decide.
Well, Crispin St. John from Radio Sovereign and Dave Stevens from Radio Jackie, thank you for being with us this afternoon. Thanks for all your calls. Sorry, as usual, that we haven't had time to come to everybody. It's interesting, actually, that we've had no calls at all against pirate radio. I don't know whether that's encouraging for both of you. Probably is. Before we go, I must mention that the results of last week's competition, we've had no time for them with this special programme this week, so we'll be giving you the results and drawing the winner next week. That's for the competition that we ran last week. Also, on next week's programme, we have our special feature on home recording. Our service line will be on the problems and pleasures of home tape recording, and you will be hearing some of the best amateur tape recordists in the country. So join us next week. Thanks to everybody involved in this week's programme, Tony Blackburn, Dave Pearce, Richard Jackson, Tom Brown and Dave Fuller, and me, Everard Davey. I'll be back here at 3 o'clock next Sunday. Bye-bye.
Well, Tower Bridge has been reopened earlier than expected, so this will ease the traffic build-up that's been there on either side of the river most of the day. Resurfacing work at New Cross, that's due to finish any time now. At present, there's still quite a bit of heavy traffic along the A2. The West End, that's quite busy with sightseers and tailbacks on Bayswater Road, also Piccadilly, and the Christmas decorations are attracting much traffic to Oxford Street and Regent Street. Finally, the M40 at Junction 1 from Denham Roundabout has been reopened. Laurie Keenan of the AA.
Two of Six Radio London.